Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival, to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we stare at the box in the corner, sitting through the procession of B-grade stars on the lead up to the New Year's fireworks, and we chat with our buddies, and we wait for an appointment with God. I'm Chris Adams.
I'm Nick McKinnon.
You got a good smile, Nick.
Yeah, not as good as Karl Stefanovic. I love that guy.
Yeah. You love that guy?
I love that guy. Everyone wants to be him. Women want to be with him, except for Lisa Wilkinson. She doesn't want to be with him.
Maybe she knows something.
She's too good for him.
Yes. So we are in the lead up to New Year's when we're recording this. And we've just had Christmas. How was your Christmas?
My Christmas was very enjoyable. We had a family do. Yep. We do Secret Santa so that we don't have to get stressed about buying presents for everyone. Yeah, it was lovely. How was Christmas for you?
How was Christmas for me? I had to work in the morning.
Wow, did you get paid like 8 times the normal rate?
2.5, I think.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. But then a nice Christmas evening with my wife. Yeah, big Christmas dinner. It was good. I like it. A quiet one for a change. I liked a quiet Christmas.
Does Pilot enjoy Christmas? Does she like get all the leftovers?
She does. She loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you dress her up as like a reindeer? Are you one of those people?
She refuses to be dressed up in anything. She's terrible. We got her this Snoopy bomber jacket once when she was a little puppy, and she just tore it to shreds. Any sort of clothing item you put her in, she's, how dare you? How dare you? And just will fight you on it.
She does not wear the pants in the relationship.
Nah, she goes naked all the time.
Sometimes I do that too.
Okay. You're not naked now, though.
Much like a news anchor, Chris, you can only see the top half of me. You got no idea what's going on down south.
Okay. So this is going to be a slightly unorthodox episode. Sort of a recap, catch up. You know, I want to take stock of where we've got to before we close out the year. It's also a bit of a happy holidays theme. And so I've got a few questions for you, Nick. First up, on the happy holidays thing, aren't you ecstatic that you don't have to say that anymore, that Donald Trump has saved Christmas? You did hear about that, right? That Trump has saved Christmas?
I'm aware that he thinks he has.
He's been claiming that he saved Christmas, yeah.
He's been very public in his praise of himself, which is very unlike him, Chris.
Oh, it's so unlike him.
Yeah. He's been the leader of the Save the Merry Christmas Brigade.
Yeah, because Obama,
yeah.
Ugh, that Obama guy, people couldn't say Merry Christmas under Obama. For like 8 years, they couldn't say Merry Christmas.
He's a secret Muslim.
Yeah, even though I was just looking at an article before where Obama said Merry Christmas this year. He said Merry Christmas last year. Actually, the first year he was in the presidency, back in 2009 on Christmas Eve, that was his first Christmas message. He said, hello, everyone, and Merry Christmas. Trump that year said, wishing everyone a wonderful holiday and a happy, healthy, prosperous new year. And then in 2010, we also had Obama saying Merry Christmas and Trump saying on Twitter, wishing everyone a very happy holiday season. Yeah, so I don't know. He changed his tune a bit.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's saying he's bringing Merry Christmas back.
So he wasn't allowed to say it in those years. Only Obama was.
No. What he's saying is, Chris, is that he is the whole world.
Oh, yes.
And he wasn't saying it before, and now he's bringing it back.
Oh, they should make a Christmas movie about him. There's a really good story arc there. But really, why is this even a thing?
Because he's the president of the United States, and whenever he tweets stuff, news organizations rush to make a story out of it.
Is there actually a story that Christmas is under attack?
My response is, I don't care.
I know. It's pretty stupid.
Yeah. I mean, we are living in a culture that is getting less and less religious.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's true. I haven't seen any data that says less people are saying Merry Christmas. I don't know if that's true.
Mm.
And even if it is true, it sort of makes sense.
Yeah, but it doesn't bother me either way. You can say Merry Christmas, Happy Holiday. I had a Muslim guy say Merry Christmas to me Christmas morning while I was on my way to work.
Yeah.
It's like, are we making up that people are actually offended by the term so that the Trumps and a lot of evangelical Christians can try and use Christmas in some sort of culture war? They're going to save it, rescue it. They're going to fight against this political correctness they think's happening. I don't know. For me, it's like in doing that, they're weaponizing Christmas. You're weaponizing the nativity and Jesus and giving and everything that relates to the Christian story. You're weaponizing it to fight a war, and you turn people off or against you. You make it all exclusive instead of inclusive, and you shoot yourself in the foot. I think they partly do it because they aren't the ones central to the Christmas story at the moment, so they get shouty. But they're going to lose the culture war. It's just so dumb. I mean, as you said, more and more people, right, they aren't religious anymore, and that seems to be the trend.
Yeah, but Trump is a politician. That's a strange thing to say. He's a politician, and he doesn't care about 4 years, 8 years down the track. He's a politician right now. The trends don't even really matter to him because they're not going to affect him. They'll affect the Republican Party, but they're not going to affect him. And he just doesn't care. And, like, there's a decent size of his supporter base that are religious and do feel this sense that the country is moving away from what it's always been, and they feel like the country's being taken away from them. And so it speaks to that emotionally. So I don't know. Mm. It's just very few people are saying we shouldn't say Merry Christmas. And if there are people saying that, they're stupid. So there's nothing to see here. There's no story. Go away, Donald Trump. Go back to tweeting and news outlets. Can we please start reporting news?
I feel like the thing that is potentially worth talking about is that, you know, so this is some sort of culture war they're having. And I was thinking, well, what sort of culture wars are we having in Australia? You know, because there's some similarities, but we're not quite as extreme. And I was looking back into the history of our culture wars, and like we've had some way back, but of more recent note was John Howard, who sort of started with the whole refugee thing. And when we started dividing between left and right, and they started driving this wedge between people, and, you know, culture war is about, well, what is our identity? You know, it's fighting for a national identity, essentially. Like, what are our values? What do we care about? And so you end up saying, you're an Australian. No, you're an Australian. No, you're, you know. And I think that some of the fear for us is that, and maybe for the States as well, is that if it's hard to define what our culture is, then maybe we do fear that some other culture can come in and sort of override us or something. Because being so multicultural and being so new, we don't have this long past, and there's a history of, well, we came in and took over one culture, you know, so maybe someone else can come in and take over ours. So I think that's the what I find interesting is that we've got this battle going on, and this is the thing that I've always been trying to fight against. One of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast was to try and find a way to bridge the divide. And it seems to be mostly around social issues. And you've spoken before about the danger of that when we're so divided that we'll just start listening to whatever our side champions, whatever cause our side champions, instead of fighting each individual issue on its own merits.
Mm.
You don't have much to say about this, do you?
Oh, so, well,
nothing to see here.
I wanted to make sure you're finished, but I can understand the perspective of the traditional conservative American, or to a lesser degree Australian, who is concerned about our culture changing so rapidly. Our culture has changed dramatically in the last 50 years, and that's fine for people like you and me who agree with all those changes that have happened. It's not so fine for the people that have been disagreeing with it the whole time.
Yeah.
So you and I are comfortable that Aboriginals get to vote. We're comfortable that women get to vote and more and more free to join the workforce and don't have to have the slippers ready and the dinner ready whenever the man walks home. We find that homosexuality is no longer a crime and as of this year is now legal. We're fine with all those things. We think they're all good things. But there's people we disagree with. Well, at some point they disagreed with all of them and presumably changed their opinion on at least the racial part of it, if not the women and the homosexuality. But if you disagree with those sort of things and if you were raised by parents who said condescending things about all those different changes that have happened, then I can understand why you would be apprehensive about the future moving forward. And so then you see terrorist attacks that have been happening by Muslims, and you see large numbers of Muslim immigration. Well, I guess from their perspective, large numbers of Muslim immigration. And you would be fearful that there's more changes on the way. And while same-sex marriage might be one thing, it's completely different when you start seeing Sharia law implemented on the street corner. So I can understand where these people are coming from, and I agree with some of their concerns, but I guess I wasn't brought up in that household, so I don't share the same upbringing and the same discontent over the social change that has occurred in the last 50 years.
One of the things we do over New Year's is we look back over where we've come, and we also look forward. And in looking forward, you know, I'm concerned. I'm always trying to find ways of how do we, you know, with this wedge that has been driven in, how do we actually move forward and take everyone with us? I don't know. We've got this left and right, and we come to the middle to fight, but I guess I want the middle to be the place where we can actually come together somewhat, not just to fight, because I'm coming to understand that the left and right both bring different things to the table. And, you know, the left often get called bleeding hearts. They're the ones with this heart and this emotional response. And the flip side of that is the right can be seen as heartless, but, you know, but rational as well, instead of emotional. But yeah, the right, you know, they can use emotion, and with the people that who feel left behind and unheard and, so they can use emotion heaps, and the left can claim logic as well all the time. But I don't know, just with the left and right, rational and emotional, all of this stuff, I think we need each other, and it needs to come together in the middle somehow.
So, like, I think the thing that I disagree with what you just said then is I want there to be fights. I want the middle to be a verbal place of disagreement and argument.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if it isn't, then it means that everyone has just retreated to their own silos and aren't engaging in the middle. So I want the middle to be a place of open, honest disagreement and argumentative discourse. But yep. I want it to always be...
You want it to be grown up. You want it to be a grown up version of argument and discourse.
I want it to always be about ideas and not about personalities. So I want it to always be about us not digging a trench that we exist in, but we are coming into a place of public discourse, not coming against someone, but coming to meet with someone and say, here are my ideas, I'm going to stand up for my ideas, but I'm also going to listen and see where I'm wrong and see where the other person is right. But we have to have the middle as being a place of argument and not a place of just love.
Yeah, I hear what you say, but, you know, it's when you were talking about fear before. For me, fear is the tool that's being used to, you know, often drive that wedge, you know, and love is the other side of the coin. Love is the way that we need to go. But, yeah, I want argument in the middle. I want ideas to run up against each other, you know, because democracy, it's by its very nature, it's collectivist. It's, you know, all of us together.
Yeah.
And I just, but some part of the problem for me is, you know, often being on the left, I often see the right as being very individualist, you know, so it's hard when they have a sort of me approach to stuff. You bring up a collectivist idea and they you know, take their ball and go home. Everyone's got this sort of selfish me part to themselves, and the left are constantly in struggle with that, you know, what's me and what's the collective. But how do we bring love into this equation? This is one thing which I've found interesting. It's another question I guess I have for you. So some of the questions I had for you, you know, looking back at the year, were one of them's partly to do with love. I don't know if I want to get into it too much right now. I might come back to that. So I guess I'm going to move to the next question being, so what was significant for you from 2017, be that globally or I'm more interested on a personal level, but, you know, some of that global stuff may play into the personal level because I'm sort of wanting to recap that when we started this podcast, it was defined as myself, believer, Nick, non-believer.
Can I be called doubter?
You can be called doubter. This happened in 2017 for you. So I'm thinking this has been a significant year for you because that's a massive move. That's a massive shift because we're very habitual creatures, you know, and you've been going along this one path for a long, long time and you're off the beaten track.
My track's taken a detour.
It has. And so what's been significant about this year for you? I'm imagining that's one. Please be that one because that's what I wanted to talk to you about.
yeah, definitely. So this year has been it feels like a unique year for me. It feels like I've allowed myself to be opened up to changing many of anything really of the things that I believe. And I think I would have hoped that I was like that always, but I think this year may have just been a tipping point year. I don't know.
Was there a trigger at all? Was there something that sort of set you on your way to make such a significant change? Or was it just an accumulation?
Can it be both? I think it's both.
Sure.
So two things happened this year that I think exposed me to new ideas that I hadn't allowed myself to be exposed to in the past. One is YouTube, which, believe it or not, has existed for a little while. And I've been aware that it's existed for a little while, but I've always loved listening to debates between atheists and Christian people, like for years, like for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I love watching them. I love listening to them. I love hearing those sort of conversations. YouTube, I've just found to be like there's a never ending source of these sort of debates. And so I think for the last couple of years, I've really enjoyed getting into science more. And that led me to some people that had some pretty basic questions about God that I hadn't heard decent answers to. And I think over the course of probably a few years, but this year was one of those tipping points where I was just exposed to so many good questions. Like, I don't know what it was like for you, but for me, when I was growing up, I had this assumption that anyone that debated Christians must just, you know, be being led by the devil. They just must hate Christianity. And there must just be this burning hatred of love and all good things in them.
Mm.
And so to hear them speak with such reverence and such awe and such majesty about a whole host of things, and then to hear them raise questions that I really had no answer to, was profound and disturbing and challenging and all those sort of things. The second thing that I was exposed to was podcasts, which I had never used before, but there's one of these atheist guys who I seem to relate to or respond to or resonate with. It was a guy called Sam Harris, who is a really interesting guy because, well, firstly, he doesn't call himself an atheist, even though everyone else calls him an atheist. He's one of the four so-called horsemen of the new atheist movement, along with Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and Daniel Dennett. The really interesting thing about this guy is he grew up studying religion because he was fascinated with it. And he grew up, he spent like literally years doing Buddhist retreats on meditation. Like, I can't imagine spending, you know, a weekend doing meditation, because it just seems like, wow, so challenging and hard work. And this, yeah, he's just a fascinating guy because he just did it for that long. And so he ended up doing a whole bunch of study into neuroscience, not because he was interested in the brain, but because he was interested in beliefs and he was interested in how that works. And so he got into neuroscience from the idea of belief. And so I just found him to be fascinating because he just wasn't attacking it for the sake of attacking it. He was attacking it because of the consequences of beliefs that he saw in society, and, you know, Islam's one of them. So he's got a podcast called The Waking Up Podcast, which I loaded onto my phone and the first episode I came across was one where he was reading through one of the newsletters that it's called the Dabiq, which is one of the newsletters that ISIS put out. He was just literally just reading word for word this article that a Finnish lady had written talking about why she was so thrilled that her little kids had been blown up. It's so hard to wrap your head around that this was an educated, wealthy person who gave away her life to move from Finland to go and live in whatever hellhole she lived in, and both her kids got killed for it, and her response to that was, praise God, or praise Allah. Like, it was shocking to me hearing that and then going down the rabbit hole of how people actually believe this stuff. And that scary empathetic thing of coming to some understanding of how they get there from a belief in the afterlife and belief in the rewards that you get when you are faithful to your God. That stuff was just shocking to me. You would know this. For years, I haven't called myself a Christian. That's not a new thing for me to say I'm not a Christian. But that was more a label distinction than it was an articulation of beliefs I hold or don't hold. I've never liked labels because it confuses things for people, because you think you're communicating one thing when you're talking to someone when they've already got their own definition of what that word is, and it may not be the same thing as what you're actually trying to communicate. But yeah, this year I really have stepped away from a belief in God, and that's a new thing. And yeah, a big part of that has been Sam Harris and learning more about the evil that beliefs can do in the world, and how, like, Muslim people really believe the stuff they believe. They're not pretending it. If that's true of them, how do I know it's not true of me? Like, I was born in the country I was born into. I didn't choose it. I didn't choose to grow up in a Christian household. It just was. This year has been pretty astonishing for me in that way. Yeah, I think that sort of gives a bit of an outline as to how things have gone down for me.
Yeah. Oh, just, you know, hearing all that, I was reading earlier Dietrich Bonhoeffer talking about the future of what he saw the future of Christianity as being. And he was saying that, you know, he was calling for a faith that was found in a religionless Christianity. That's the only way that he thinks that it can survive.
Mm.
And I'm just seeing, I think you're talking about very religious views. You know, they are, yeah, they're belief faith views as well, but they're just, feels to me, you know, like religion warps a lot of things. But what I guess what I'm interested in is how's that working for you? You've made these changes in how you see it all. How's that been playing out for you in your day-to-day world? Is it working?
Yes.
It is. There you go.
It is fantastic.
Okay.
Like, so from the moment that I decided that I wouldn't call myself a Christian, from then on, it was like there was a lot of questions and a lot of unresolved questions. There's nothing wrong with questions, but I think there is something, for me anyway, profoundly troubling with having unresolved questions. Questions that you just don't have answers for. Questions like, you know, why is God so absent in creation? Why is it that I can pray to him for 20 years and not hear anything back? Why does God allow the sort of suffering that we're seeing in the world? Not human-caused suffering that's free will sort of stuff, but, you know, tornadoes and disease and all that sort of stuff. Why does he allow that? Like, why is any of that necessary in creation? And I just didn't have any answers for it, but I still went, yeah, but I still believe that God's good and blah, 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 blah. That was really unsettling for me to have all those things, and they didn't fit. The jigsaw pieces just didn't fit. Like, I feel like the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle fit now, and it just feels so much freer. It feels so much like things make sense in the world again, which is nice. And, you know, there's shitty things about it too. Like, I want there to be a heaven. I really want there to be a heaven. I don't know how that makes sense. I don't know why it would exist, but I really want there to be one. Like, I want, you know, like, I've got a son that died and I want to meet him. I want to have those conversations with him and find out what he's like. So, you know, there's stuff like that that is not the way you would want the world to be, but there's plenty of things in the world that aren't the way I want it to be. So that's just another one of those. That feeling that everything finally makes sense is for me, it's been a freeing experience. Do you feel free, Chris?
Yeah, I don't feel constrained. Well, not by my faith anyway. I think religion often puts this set of rules around us that binds us, whereas I think faith is meant to be setting you free from your own crap. So the only thing that sort of constrains me is the things that I haven't really let go of, and maybe there's still some things I need to examine. So I'll keep examining them. But, you know, I feel really free.
Because you don't like the God works in mysterious ways either.
No, I don't.
And you have those same questions that I have.
I do, but I'm a little bit more comfortable with the absence of God within creation. Not any more comfortable with suffering in the world necessarily, but I guess I'm just finding it interesting as listening to you talking about it all, and even talking about, you know, Sam Harris, and like I've spoken to you before about, you know, why do we have these forever conversations about God if you don't believe anymore? So why is he having these things? And I just think it's interesting that searching for answers, seeking, struggling with all of that, in a sense, I sort of see that as I see that as living out a faith sort of existence more than not. You know, I think certainty is sort of like the greatest threat to faith, where religion will dictate your morals, and so you end up, you look for something from without, you know, from outside of you, instead of looking for meaning and purpose within. And I think living a life where you've got no safety net, but you're living a life of meaning and purpose still, that I find that interesting. I think that's more faith. You know, there's a part of me which sort of wants to challenge you that goes, well, you know, okay, you say you don't believe. In a way, I think you do. It's difficult, but believing, I think you don't believe in your head, right? But if you're living life with love and with meaning and purpose, then there's a part of you which is attached to the eternal, I guess. And speaking about love, you know, love is the thing that for me that drives out, like John said, you know, he said there is no fear in love. Love drives out fear. I think you can be someone who you can say that you believe, but if you don't live with love, then you've got nothing. And you can say you don't believe, but if you live with love, then you're still moving forward like it matters. I don't think that you stepping away from intellectually believing in a God means at all that you say nothing matters, because that wouldn't represent you at all, right?
No, of course things matter.
Yeah, and you were talking before about that you find joy in science.
Yeah.
And you find, I think it's even interesting, like I was going to ask you, so I will ask you, I'll ask you this now, well, I might come back around, but so what,
is the one we've been waiting for, listeners.
Oh, no, what do you, because it's New Year's, you know, so there's this sort of tradition that people will come up with sort of like a resolution, and instead of asking you what your New Year's resolution is, I was going to ask you, is there something that you desire going into this next year? I think desire is a better word. I don't know. A resolution is often we're going to look at something negative about ourselves that we want to change. And that's hard to do because we're very habitual creatures, and which is also why I find that, you know, this step that you've taken this year is quite a significant thing, because you've lived all your life believing one thing and now you don't. Breaking habits is hard to do. Like less than 10% of people actually achieve their New Year's resolutions, and they're often more harmful because if you fail them, then you end up at a worse place than where you began and so on. But it's more wanted to focus on, you know, what do you desire? Because I think that's an interesting question.
So I desire to lose some weight. I desire to drink less coffee. I desire to... What are the other things that people...
These sound like resolutions.
Yeah, they are. That's what I was trying to do. I was trying to come up with what most people would come up with.
Well, you don't pick more than one. If you pick more than one, you're bound to fail.
No, doesn't that like give me more chances to be successful at one of them?
No, no, because to change any sort of habit, you need to focus on it, you know, keep working on it consciously. No. You have to because unconsciously we do our habits. So you have to consciously... make the choice over and over again.
No, I can just get lucky. Anyway.
What do you desire going into this next year?
Well, so like when...
To refine your faith intellectually, right?
Oh, that That's one. It? Yeah, that one's it. Yeah, sure. No. The first thing that came to mind when you said this is I really hope Trump gets impeached in 2018. Yeah. But that's not personal at all. But on a personal level, I don't have anything specific. I've got just general things like I want to live a life that is purposeful, interesting, filled with these sort of conversations.
That's a really healthy answer.
It's probably pretty boring, though.
Not really, because the reason I was asking this question is I was listening to a podcast.
Yeah.
That had our mutual mate, well, we don't know him personally, Pete Rollins in it.
We love Pete.
And he was talking about desire. What we desire, if we get what we desire, then we don't desire it anymore. You know, we live in this sort of, he was saying, we live in this perpetual state of not, that we don't have what we desire and we're constantly trying to get what we desire, whereas the actual joy, the happiness is not found in getting what we want.
Yeah.
It's the obstacle that we want. It's the thing that we're trying to get over, to get to what we want, that we actually enjoy.
Yeah.
And so that's why I found it interesting that, you know, that you really enjoyed watching YouTube debates about all of this sort of topic. I think what you enjoy is these discussions. I think what you enjoy is the obstacle to God, you know. What you enjoy is trying to find and seek these answers to these questions which you can't find. If you found the answers, would you be disappointed? I don't know. But what he was going on and saying was that with so many religions, you know, they'll promise that you can have this perfect life and you can have everything that you want, but that doesn't work for people. When you get what you want, doesn't work for you. What we really want is the obstacle. But what Christianity did, this is, and we've had a previous discussion where you said he doesn't believe in God. Maybe he doesn't believe in God, but I heard him say in this podcast just today that the reason he's a Christian, he said, doesn't mean he believes in God, but the reason he's a Christian is that, so basically the desire in that time was, you know, to know God, to be with God. And the obstacle at that point was Jesus, because he's this false God. He's this, you know, he's not real. And so they go and kill him, right? And he's saying what Christianity did in response to that was they said, well, actually, the obstacle is the desire. So the obstacle and desire, you know, it's, Jesus is God. So he's the two in one. So, and that love brings the two things together, brings the obstacle and the desire together. And if you, that's the only place where it's really healthy and where it works, is when you can bring the desire and the obstacle together. And that's, you know, a loving relationship is when you desire this person, but you're forever finding out new things about them and they're this endless person to explore. So just, you know, finding all of the answers is not necessarily, it's seeking, it's going on the journey. And so I find it interesting that, you know, I just want to challenge you. I think you are living a life of faith in a way.
I like the journey, but I want answers as well.
Sure. There can be answers in there.
Yeah.
But how do we find answers? I think that's because one thing that I found interesting in watching your journey is that you're seeking very intellectually for all of this stuff. I was listening to some other stuff. Where was that? I don't remember. But they were talking about different, you know, different cultures, or even there was like an Aboriginal understanding was that there's three brains, you know, there's the gut brain, the heart brain, and the mind brain. In this particular understanding, everything starts with the gut feeling, and then it gets filtered by the heart, and then it gets filtered by the brain, you know. And we just in our Western culture live very much in our brain. Are we potentially limiting ourselves from finding answers if we're just searching for them just intellectually? That's my challenge to you.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Because I don't know how much stock you put in concepts like heart or gut, you know.
Well, those two things are very different. So, this is an intellectual answer, so, you know, shoot me down.
No, that's fine. No. There's intellectual, sciencey stuff about it as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So, there is no heart brain, but there is a gut brain. Like, there are – that's a real thing. I don't really know much about it, but, we do have – thinking going on in our gut. I don't understand that, but that is real. The heart thing isn't real.
Yeah. They're saying there's neurological signals that go from the gut to the brain more than there are that go from the brain to the gut. And that could just be housekeeping stuff, you know, just saying, do you need more of this? Do you need more of that? What do you need? You know, because the gut also produces stuff like serotonin and stuff that's all, you know, used in the brain. But, you know, maybe there could be, because there are, you know, neurotransmitter stuff in the gut, but there is the vagus nerve, I think they call it. It runs from the gut, but it also runs by the heart as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if it connects to the heart, but it runs by it. So that could be part of that area of the body. Weird. It's all weird.
It is all weird.
But you're just saying it's all one thing anyway. Is that what you're sort of saying?
It is definitely all one thing, but to take this to a more spiritual, less heady place, it's still an intellectual argument, I think. Like, we often think of ourselves that we reside behind our eyes in our brain. We don't think of ourselves residing in our finger or in our foot or in our knee. We think of ourselves as Nick resides behind my eyes and I'm observing all these things and I'm making all these decisions and I choose to pick up this thing and I exist to the limits of my skin and no further. My understanding is that there's just no evidence for that. Like, we certainly do not exist in the brain. That's like, we are the brain and we are our hands and we are all those things. There is no I hiding behind that that is observing that. We are just experiencing all of this. And in a sense, there is no difference between me and this chair I'm sitting on. Like, there's no difference between each one of those individual atoms that goes between every atom in my brain all the way down to the chair. Like, the two atoms that are not quite but almost touching each other between my bum and the chair are not really that much difference between the two that reside within my body.
So what holds all of your atoms into the specific shape of you?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It's amazing, though, that it exists, that you exist.
Yeah, this consciousness thing is baffling. We don't understand it. And I'm not pretending to have answers that I don't have. And that's one of the things that I've been trying to do more and more throughout my life. And I think this year has been a bit of a, certainly in the faith thing, has been a bit of a watershed one there, that I'm not pretending to have answers that I don't have. And so I am a very head person, and there are certainly deficits to that. I'm certainly not the most emotional person in the world, and I'm not saying that's a good thing. That does not mean that I think the head is the only thing that matters or intellectual arguments are the only thing that matters. It's why I liked Sam Harris so much, because he wrote a book called something about finding spirituality without religion or something. And so I believe in spirituality. I believe in connectedness between all of us and us finding awe in nature. And I understand why people find it in devotion to a supreme being. I get that, because all of us want to feel like we are important and that we're loved and all that. Like, that just makes sense. Like, I want all those things too. I'm not wanting to have a go at anyone, but I do want to critique my own ideas and the things that I believe, and I want to keep refining them and making my ideas better. And that's why I like these conversations so much, Chris, and it's why I like YouTube so much, because I'm able to expose myself to new ideas and new conversations. And I don't like debates so much, but I do like conversations, because I want it to be about a sharing of ideas and a throwing them all into a mixing pot and working out which ones are worth picking up at the end of it.
Yeah. I was just one of the things you were saying earlier reminded me of another thing I heard today from Rob Bell, talking about that you meant to love with all of your heart. That's the line. But there was even another interpretation of that being you meant to love with all of your muchness, he said, but it's like with all of your being, you know, so it's not just this, what, you know, it's with all that you have.
Yeah.
You know, some people are more emotionally connected than others, and that's just the way it is. You know, so just to go, oh, maybe I should be just listening more with my heart. You can't just do it. Like, there's so many things that I learn and that I read and that I hear about, and I go, oh, that would be a much better way for me to be living my life. But to integrate that into a sort of a habitual to just what I do unconsciously, that's really hard to do. That's why New Year's resolutions are hard to do, why all of this stuff is changing yourself is hard.
Yeah, yeah.
So just being able to integrate this stuff can be a very slow process.
So can I ask what your desires are for 2018?
Trump to be impeached. He can fuck off.
Hey, you're not allowed to swear.
2017 can fuck off, really. The only good thing from this year, you know, gay marriage and obviously the Eternity Ward podcast getting off the ground. Because I'm looking at you and the changes that you've made, and I've stated previously that some of the changes that you've made, like I'm not concerned at all with where you stand with what you think about God, because I still think that you're living a life with love, even if you don't think you're the most emotionally connected person, you know. So I still think you're living a life with meaning and purpose. But I have been concerned by your swing to the right,
my Milo love.
So I've been watching you go through a lot of changes, and I was very comfortable with where my buddy was 6 months ago.
I tricked you into this podcast.
You did. It's been really challenging to me, but I'm still sort of, in a sense, just treading water. You know, you're the one that's going through all of these changes. I haven't really moved much. I still spend a lot of time thinking. I've got all of these ideas of how to see the world or how to see God just flitting past, going in and out. So I guess if I was to say what would I desire, it would be...
Right-wing Chris.
No, not at all. Not going there. I mean, if there comes to be, then it does. But no, I think what I would desire is to not be treading water. You know, I want to get to somewhere where I can, yeah, actually integrate the things that I want to change. I don't know, maybe to be more satisfied with being dissatisfied. I don't know. I think I want to be swimming somewhere, you know, and not just treading water. I want to be going in some direction. But that's part of what this is for me, was creating something that was going to be challenging about faith and doubt. So, yeah, I still want to go on that journey. I'm looking forward to interviewing other people and hearing their stories about faith and doubt.
Yeah, this year's been our year. Next year we're going
to I think so. Us
interviewing people.
Yeah, because I think we've run out of things to talk about. So
that's the end of the show. You just won't let me talk about them.
Going back to it all, I don't want to be chasing my tail. So just trying to get to something that I desire that's not going to be helpful. So that's why I really liked your answer about what it is that you were wanting to do. So I'm not going to make a New Year's resolution to fix whatever's wrong with me. I want to focus on getting something out of the obstacle, getting something out of, you know, I've got to figure it out. I don't know. Anything you want to say to wrap up the year?
Happy holidays. Don't you try and force your religion on people, Chris.
Do I have one?
Well.
It depends on your definition. I think to some extent.
Yeah, you do have a religion. Of course you do.
Yeah, I think to some extent I would say that I still do, even though I sort of have claimed for much of my life that I am not religious. But I think that even by carrying the label Christianity means that I carry some religiousness with me.
Religion would be belief in some sort of supernatural being, wouldn't it?
See, religion for me is the man-made construct of a way to live out having a relationship or obtaining knowledge of, or, you know, living within a set of rules, whatever, about this is about how we approach God. So for me, if God exists, God predates all religions. So God is just God, and we don't actually need religion. It can be helpful, sure, for some people to, you know, get a kickstart or whatever. They might find it interesting. There might be a whole lot of truth there which you wouldn't discover otherwise. But religion for me is a human construct in dealing with this concept of God. Human systems, structures, they can serve people or not. And I think, you know, the way Jesus sort of dealt with laws or whatever was, you know, if they're not serving the people, well, tear it down. If it's not serving the people, if it's doing more harm in the world, you know, okay, if it serves your congregation, well, that's one thing, but, you know, it's got to serve everyone. That's the whole thing of, you know, like people talk about national interest, and that's just another form of self-interest if you look at it on a global scale, you know. So is it serving everyone? If it's not serving everyone, then what do we have it for? I've never really subscribed to belonging to religion, but my faith is built on a fairly strong bedrock of Christianity, which is a religion. So for me, it's the one that I feel in my gut, you know, in my heart, and less so in my head. But there's intellectual stuff there, which I do find really interesting. You described in the last podcast about the Christmas story. What's the story of Christmas really about? You know, when you said it was about God looked down at these screw ups and said, how am I going to respond to that? I'll go hang out with them, you know. But for me, it wasn't just that he went and hung out with them. It was that it became an embryo. God outside of time, I think I heard someone say, that condensed into this embryo and then was born as a baby, completely dependent, and then developed into a child and into a teenager and into an adult. Just that whole concept sort of rewrote. So for Christianity, for me, it's about rewriting the concept of power, that we humans have this idea that that God is this transcendent power above, looking down from the clouds. And we think power on human terms, you know, comes with guns and missiles or with high status or muscles, and it's intimidating. It's about having control. But Jesus says no. Vulnerability is, and love is, serving is power. And, well, you know, he flipped it. So if your belief isn't serving everyone and you're just trying to exert power over others, then
you're Donald Trump.
You're not doing what I consider Christianity, but that's, yeah. Yeah, you're Donald Trump.
Grabbing pussies.
Don't forget, he saved Christmas.
That's right.
That makes up for it, right?
And that's what all those Christians care about. They don't care about the grabbing pussies. They just care about that he saved Merry Christmas.
It's amazing how they justify that.
God, they must be stupid.
The tax changes where he made all the rich richer. I thought we meant to be looking after the poor.
Well, it's looking after the go-getters. It's not looking after those lazy dole bludgers, Chris.
The poor, the sick, the widows. I don't understand. So anyway, Nick, the year has come to an end.
Has.
By the time this gets out, it probably will be the new year.
It will definitely be the new year. It's been a good year.
What? No, it hasn't.
Why not? What's wrong? People do this every year. I hate this. At the end of every year, people bitch and whinge about how pathetic the year's been. I'm like, the year's been brilliant. What are you talking about?
There you go.
You don't have to get lost in US politics. Forget that Donald Trump's an ass. It hasn't affected your life at all.
Going full circle back to, you know, I'm still trying to find how we move forward as a collective when there's so much dividing us. So that's why I'm a pessimist. But I like that you're optimistic about how the year's been, because there was another thing that Peter Rollins was saying that I thought was really cool. He says that love renders the world sublime. The little things. Love renders the little things sublime. You don't just have to focus on the great big things all the time.
In the words of my favourite philosophical band.
Who are?
Cloud Cult. You would love Cloud Cult, Chris, because they're a Christian but not Christian group.
Okay. I'll just leave that at that.
And they write like folky rock orchestral music.
And what did they say?
If ever I can't see the magic around me, please take my hands off my eyes.
I like it.
How good's that?
Happy New Year. What was that? Is that a trumpet?
No, that was my blower.
Oh, right. Yeah. All right.
Obviously.
Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
Go forward with love. You're going to have one final word, Nick?
Outstanding.
God here again. Are you shaking your head incredulously or nodding in approval? Well, if you got something out of this episode, you could really help those poor idiots by contributing to or supporting the Eternity Ward. You can leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it. You can share it on social media or discuss it in your blog, podcast, or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, send a hallelujah. I don't know, but don't send a prayer because I'm kind of busy right now. Join the discussion in the comments section, ask questions, and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward. We'll be right back.